Welcome to today's deep dive. I want you to start by just thinking about the last time you walked into a grocery store.
Oh yeah, it's almost overwhelming if you really stop to look at it.
Right. You walk into the produce section and you see these literal mountains of food. Strawberries, lettuce, almonds. And there is just this implicit assumption of endless abundance that you and I kind of take completely for granted.
Completely. We just expect it to be there.
Yeah. But the reality of how that food actually gets there is, well, it's anything but simple. Just look at California. That state alone produces like 12.5% of the United States' total agricultural output.
Which is a staggering number. I mean, the scale is almost hard to comprehend until you compare it globally.
Oh, for sure.
Like, if you were to treat California as its own sovereign nation, it actually ranks as the fifth largest food and cotton supplier in the entire world.
Wow, the fifth largest in the world.
Yeah. We are talking about millions of acres of these incredibly diverse microclimates growing, you know, everything from garlic to walnuts.
Right. Which means keeping tabs on what is growing, how well it's growing, and how much food we are actually going to have at the end of the season. That isn't just a local farming issue.
No, not at all.
It's a massive global economic and logistical priority. And that brings us to the mission of our deep dive today. We are exploring a really groundbreaking 2025 study by researchers from UC Davis and Texas A&M.
Yeah, this study is wild.
It really is. They have built an entirely new framework to try and accurately predict crop yields for over 70 different crops simultaneously across every single county in California.
And, you know, predicting crop yield at that scale is notoriously difficult. I mean, historically, scientists use what are called process-based models.
Right, the older systems.
Exactly. These were essentially rigid mathematical formulas based on how plants grow. But those older models often, well, they failed when applied broadly.
Because they couldn't handle the variables.
But yeah, they would produce massive inaccuracies because they had to make these sweeping assumptions about human management practices, like when exactly a farmer decides to apply fertilizer or how they manage irrigation.
Which changes all the time.
Right. They assumed way too much stability in an environment that is fundamentally unstable and, frankly, chaotic.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because forecasting 70 different crop yields across California is basically like trying to accurately predict the final scores of 70 different sports games simultaneously.
No, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, and the rules of the games are actively changing based on the weather. You can't just look at a calendar and say, well, it's May, the corn is in the ground, we'll have a million tons by October.
No, absolutely not.
It's a mathematical nightmare.
So the researchers needed a way to track this massive agricultural game from every conceivable angle, tracking the soil, the sky, the plants themselves.
Which leads us directly to the foundation of their work. Because before they could build any kind of predictive AI, they had to spend years constructing a benchmark data set. All right, the data is everything.
It's the fuel. They built this massive, highly detailed historical record covering the years 2008 to 2022. It's what allows their new model to actually learn.
And looking at the timeline of this data set, there's a fascinating quirk right in the middle of it.
Yeah, the missing year.
Exactly. They built this beautiful, long-term data set spanning 14 years, but they completely excluded the year 2012. It's just entirely missing from the record. Why skip a year?
It is a fantastic reminder of the physical limitations of our technology in space. Oh. So in 2012, there was only a single operational Landsat satellite in orbit that could provide the specific data they needed.
Just one satellite for the whole globe?
Basically, yeah, for this specific type of sensor.
Right.
Because they only had one sensor up there making passes over the Earth, it was physically impossible to get clear, cloud-free imagery for every location in California for every single month of that year.
Oh, I see. Because of the weather.
Right. Clouds would roll in, block the shot, and the satellite wouldn't be back for weeks. And if you are missing a crucial month of data, say, a critical growth period in July, the entire prediction model falls apart.
It's like having your eyes closed during the most important part of the game.
Exactly. You cannot predict the end of the season if your eyes in the sky blink for a month.
So they needed continuous, flawless vision to teach the model. And what they're actually looking at with this data set is broken down into four distinct pillars, right? Gathered for every 30 to 1,000 meters of farmland.
Yes, four very specific modalities.
Let's walk through these because they essentially give the computer superhuman senses. The first layer is this satellite imagery from those Landsat satellites. But this isn't just taking a regular photo from space, is it?
No, it goes far beyond what the human eye can see. The satellites are capturing standard red, green, and blue light, sure, but they are also capturing near-infrared and shortwave infrared wavelengths.
Okay, for those of us who haven't taken a physics class recently, why do we care about infrared light when we are looking at a tomato plant?
It all comes down to chlorophyll. Healthy, vigorously growing plants absorb visible light for photosynthesis, but they strongly reflect near-infrared light.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. As a plant becomes stressed, maybe it's too hot, or it has a disease that cellular structure changes, and it reflects less near-infrared light.
So it literally changes color in the invisible spectrum.
Exactly. So by measuring these specific invisible wavelengths from space, the researchers get a highly accurate quantitative monthly checkup on the physical health and vigor of the vegetation.
Okay, so the satellite gives us a monthly health scan. But, you know, a lot can happen to a plant in the month. If the satellite sees a plant is dying, how do we know why?
And that brings us to the second layer, the climate data. This comes from a system called DAMIT. And unlike the monthly photos, this is a daily tracker.
Daily weather reports.
Right. Every single day, on a 1 kilometer grid, it is monitoring 8 different weather variables. The resolution here is key.
So what exactly is it tracking?
Well, it tracks the obvious things, like maximum and minimum daily temperatures and solar radiation, basically how much direct sunlight the crops are getting. But it also tracks complex variables like vapor pressure and something called snow water equivalent.
Snow water equivalent. Wait, why does a farmer in the middle of the flat, blazing hot Central Valley care about snow?
Because California's agriculture is heavily reliant on the snowpack in the Sierra Nevada mountains.
Or the meltwater.
Exactly. Tracking the snow water equivalent tells you exactly how much actual liquid water is locked up in that mountain snow. When it melts in the spring and summer, that is the water that will eventually flow down into the reservoirs and irrigation canals to feed those valley crops. It is a leading indicator of future water availability.
That makes perfect sense. So we have our monthly space photos and our daily weather reports. But I imagine just knowing it rained doesn't tell you how much water the plant actually used.
Exactly the problem. And that is why the third layer of data introduces evapotranspiration, or ET, sourced from a platform called OpenIt. This is tracked monthly at a very sharp 30-meter resolution.
Now, I might be confusing this. Is evapotranspiration just a fancy scientific word for rainfall?
Not at all. It is actually the exact opposite.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Rainfall is water entering the system. Evapotranspiration is measuring the exact amount of water that is leaving the system and returning to the atmosphere.
Leaving the system how?
It is a combination of evaporation water drying up directly from the soil and transpiration, which you can think of as plant sweat.
Plant sweat. I like that.
It is the moisture exhaled by the leaves of the crops. By measuring ET, you know exactly how much water the crop is actively consuming and losing. If a plant isn't transpiring, it isn't growing.
So it's a direct metric of the plant's metabolism. Mm. That is incredible. And finally, we have the fourth layer, which is the literal foundation of it all, the soil data pulled from the SS Ergo database. And unlike the weather or the satellite images, this data is static, right?
Yes. It does not change from day to day or month to month. But that permanent foundation is critical. The soil maps look at 5 crucial factors at a very high resolution.
Like what?
They track the available water storage capacity, meaning how much liquid the dirt acts like a sponge for. They measure the terrain slope gradient, which tells you if the field is flat or angled, dictating how water will run off.
Right.
And they measure the drainage class, showing whether the soil holds onto a puddle or lets the water drain away rapidly into the earth.
Okay, but I have to push back here for a second.
Sure.
We have had the USDA reporting historical crop yields for decades.
Mm-hmm.
Farmers have tracked the weather, the rain, and the soil quality since the dawn of agriculture.
Mm.
Why couldn't traditional prediction methods just use all this existing historical data?
Right.
Why do we suddenly need to invent a massive new deep learning model to read it?
What's fascinating here is that older statistical methods were fundamentally limited by an inability to synthesize different languages of data.
Languages of data.
Yeah. Think of it this way. Meteorological approaches, the ones driven by weather data, were great at understanding temperature and rain over a large area, but they lacked spatial resolution.
So they see the big picture.
Right. They knew a broad region was experiencing a heat wave, but they didn't know exactly how that heat was affecting a specific 30-meter patch of dirt on a specific farm.
Got it.
Now, on the flip side, remote sensing approaches looked only at the satellite images, They had the microview. They could clearly see from space that a specific field of corn was stressed.
But they didn't know why.
Exactly. Without the daily weather data integrated, they might completely miss the direct influence of a subtle climate shift that caused the stress in the first place. The true magic of this 2025 study and the immense mathematical difficulty is fusing all these vastly different types of data together seamlessly.
It's just a lot to process at once.
You have permanent static soil maps, monthly space photographs, and daily fluctuating weather charts. Traditional statistics just cannot align those overlapping realities to see the big picture.
Which brings us to the technological leap that actually makes this possible. How do you get a computer to sit down, look at a daily weather chart, a monthly infrared space photograph, and a permanent map of soil drainage, and understand how they all interact to grow a strawberry?
You have to build a highly specialized AI architecture. And for this, the researchers developed a multimodal vision transformer.
Okay, multimodal vision transformer. We definitely need to translate that. Let's start with vision transformer. What is that doing differently than older AI?
Well, traditional neural networks process data sequentially, kind of like reading a book from left to right. But a vision transformer, or VIT, uses something called an attention mechanism.
An attention mechanism.
Yeah. It looks at the entire data set all at once and learns which pieces of information are the most important to pay attention to at any given moment.
Oh, wow.
For example, the AI learns that for a specific crop, a massive spike in temperature during the month of July requires a lot of attention, whereas a slight temperature dip in November might be entirely irrelevant. It weighs the importance of the data dynamically.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But vision transformers have been around for a few years, right? Mostly doing single tasks, like recognizing an object in a photo. And I know there have been earlier attempts to use multimodal models in agriculture, but they were super limited.
Very limited. I mean, a previous model called MMST-VIT was considered advanced, but it only looked at four major crops globally: corn, cotton, soy, and wheat.
Just four.
Yeah. Another model, known as CMAVT, was restricted entirely to monitoring vineyards in very small, specific geographic areas. They were highly specialized tools.
But this new model is trying to monitor 70 different crops across an entire massive state. So how does it actually take all these different formats, the daily weather, the monthly photos, the static soil, and read them simultaneously?
It uses a process called stratified feature extraction.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the raw inputs. You have a massive jumble of different formats. The model takes every single one of these inputs and mathematically translates them into a standardized format.
Okay, so it squishes or stretches everything to fit?
Exactly. Specifically, it projects all this diverse data into an embedding dimension of 256.
Let me stop you there. Embedding dimension of 256. To anyone who isn't a computer scientist, that sounds like a sci-fi coordinate. What does that actually mean in plain English?
Think of it as creating a universal language. Imagine you have a room full of experts trying to solve a problem together. One only speaks French, one speaks Japanese, and one speaks Swahili.
They can't communicate.
Right. The embedding dimension is basically a mathematical translation layer. It translates the daily weather data, the monthly satellite pixels, and the static soil measurements into a single unified mathematical language, like teaching them all Esperanto.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah. Once all the data is in this uniform format of 256 numbers, the model's time series encoder can finally process them simultaneously, learning the spatial and temporal dynamics of the growing season as they actually happen.
And there's one more crucial piece of data it feeds into this standardized system, right? The actual identity of the plant.
Yes, very important.
It uses the cropland data layer to explicitly encode a crop type ID for that specific plot of land. So the AI explicitly knows I am currently looking at winter wheat, or I am currently grading a field of garlic.
Because without that categorical identifier, the model would be completely blind. The exact same weather pattern that produces a bumper crop of rice might completely decimate a crop of almonds. The model needs to know what rules apply to the specific plant it is watching.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because the way this AI architecture works, watching all these different elements, it is exactly like baking an incredibly complex cake.
Oh, I like this analogy.
Think about it. The static soil data is your baking pan. It dictates the shape, the depth, and the baseline conditions, and it doesn't change once you start.
Right, the foundation.
The daily climate data is the fluctuating oven temperature, rising and falling minute by minute. The monthly satellite imagery is you turning on the oven light and peeking through the window every few weeks to see how much the cake is rising. And the evapotranspiration data is like periodically sticking a toothpick in to check the cake's internal moisture.
That's spot on.
The AI is the master chef standing in the kitchen, watching all of these vastly different elements simultaneously. It knows exactly what kind of cake it's baking because of the crop ID, and it predicts exactly how the cake will taste before it's even done.
That is a brilliant way to put it. The multimodal encoder is constantly cross-referencing those inputs in real time. It sees the temperature spike in the oven, immediately checks the moisture from the ET data, and understands how the soil drainage is going to react to that heat.
It's doing all the math at once.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it tailors all of those interactions to the specific recipe, the crop type it is analyzing.
So the researchers built this AI chef, and they trained it on over a decade of data from 2008 to 2018. They let it practice on thousands of historical examples where they already knew the final harvest numbers.
Right, the training phase.
But the ultimate test of any prediction model isn't the past, it's throwing it into the unknown. They purposely hid the data from the years 2021 and 2022. They showed the model, the weather, and the photos from those years, and asked it to predict the final harvests for all 70 crops. How did it do?
It generated what we could confidently call a very impressive overall report card. On that completely unseen test data set for 2021 and 2022, the model achieved an overall R-squared score of 0.76.
Okay, for those of us who haven't taken a statistics class in a while, R-squared is measured on a scale up to 1.0, right?
Yes, exactly.
So a score of 0.76 means the model is getting it right, or very close to right, a huge chunk of the time across millions of acres. That is a highly predictive score for something as fundamentally chaotic as agriculture.
It really is excellent, especially considering the diversity of the crops. However, when you look closely at the results across the 70 individual crops, you see very distinct discrepancies.
So it's not perfect across the board.
No, the model does not treat all plants equally. It performed incredibly well with very low error rates for crops like grapes, leafy greens, and tomatoes. It nailed those predictions.
All right, yeah, good.
But it struggled significantly when it came to corn, almonds, and walnuts. For those crops, it showed much higher error rates.
How high?
Well, specifically, the root mean square error, the average difference between the predicted yield and the actual yield was exceeding 8 to 10 tons per acre for almonds and walnuts.
Wait, hold on. 8 to 10 tons per acre error. How much does an average acre of almonds even produce in a normal year?
That is exactly the issue. A highly productive acre of almonds might only yield about 1 to 1.5 tons of nuts.
Oh, wow. So if the error rate is 8 to 10 tons, the model isn't just missing the mark slightly. It is completely hallucinating almond mountains that don't even exist. It is wildly off.
Yes, it missed it by a mile.
So what does this all mean? The AI is brilliant at predicting a side salad, but it is terrible at predicting trail mix. Why did the tree nuts and the corn trip up the system so disastrously when it could perfectly predict the tomatoes?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it really comes down to the biological complexity of the crop and the limitations of a 14-year data set.
Okay, how so?
Fast-growing annual crops like leafy greens or tomatoes have relatively straightforward seasonal patterns. Think about a houseplant or a vegetable garden. You plant a seed, it grows rapidly over a few weeks, it reacts immediately to weather.
Right, if it's hot, it wilts. If you water it, it perks up.
Exactly. And you harvest it all within a few months. The AI can easily draw a straight logical line from cause to effect.
But an almond orchard isn't a vegetable garden. It's a decades-long commitment.
Precisely. Tree nuts have much more complex phenological timelines, which is just the scientific way of saying the plant's life calendar is incredibly long and convoluted.
They take years to grow.
Right. An almond orchard takes years to mature before it produces a single nut. The trees have massive deep root systems that interact with underground soil moisture in complex ways that a 30-meter satellite pixel looking at the surface might not fully capture.
I see. The satellite only sees the canopy. It doesn't see what the roots are doing 20 feet down.
Exactly. And on top of that, many nut trees exhibit something called biennial bearing.
Biennial bearing?
Yeah. This means they naturally produce a very heavy crop one year, exhaust themselves, and then produce a naturally light crop the next year as they store up energy. It is a long, multi-year biological cycle.
So essentially, 14 years of data from 2008 to 2022 is an eternity if you are studying the life cycle of a radish. But it is barely a blip if you are trying to understand the deep, multi-year seasonal trends of an old-growth walnut orchard.
That's it, exactly.
The AI hasn't seen enough long-term cycles to understand the tree's behavior.
You hit the nail on the head. The researchers openly acknowledge this limitation. The AI needs longer, more comprehensive time series data to capture the deep seasonal trends and the long-term human management practices inherent to complex orchards.
The data set just isn't old enough yet.
Right. The natural biological variability in those tree crops simply requires a much wider historical lens than a single 14-year window provides.
Okay, let's pull all of this together. Despite the struggles with the tree nets, what we have here is a monumental achievement in data synthesis.
Oh, without a doubt.
This 2025 benchmark data set and the multimodal vision transformer prove that it is actually possible to successfully monitor 70 different crops simultaneously across a landmass as huge and complex as California.
It's a huge step forward.
We can harmonize dirt maps, invisible infrared space imagery, daily weather fluctuations, and atmospheric water loss into a single, cohesive, predictive brain.
And the reason you should care about this is that it extends far beyond a fascinating computer science experiment.
Right, it has real-world stakes.
Exactly. Right now, this framework is operating at the county level, predicting broad regional yields. But the methodology here is a massive, tangible stepping stone to the future of precision farming and proactive climate adaptation.
Which we desperately need.
Yeah, we are living in a world where extreme, unpredictable weather events are becoming the norm, and global supply chains are incredibly fragile.
If a heat wave hits, we need to know what that actually means for the food supply before the harvest even happens.
Exactly. If we can accurately predict how a specific crop in a specific county will react to a sudden drought or a heat wave months before the tractors roll into the field, we can adapt.
We can prepare.
We can reroute supply chains, adjust our regional water management, and ensure food security. It replaces historical guesswork with highly actionable intelligence. We aren't just reacting to a bad harvest, we are seeing it coming from space and preparing for it.
It gives us a fighting mathematical chance against unpredictability. It really is a window into the future of how humanity feeds itself. But, you know, it also leaves me with a lingering thought about where this all inevitably leads.
Oh, where do you think it leads?
Well, right now this AI is zooming in to a 30-meter resolution to predict countywide harvests. But computing power only moves in one direction. It gets faster, more granular, and more powerful.
That's true.
What happens when this technology inevitably scales down to the field level, or even the individual plant level? If an AI can perfectly calculate the yield of a single seed based on a symphony of the environmental data, does farming become entirely deterministic?
It's a wild thought.
Will agriculture just become an exact solvable math equation? Or will nature always be that rogue referee, holding on to a few unpredictable variables ready to change the rules of the game right before the final whistle? Something to think about next time you're standing in the produce aisle.